There are certain situations most of us dread: giving a speech to a crowded room, performing an audition, writing a final exam, even going on a first date. Sometimes we're able to rise to the occasion, but sometimes we choke. Today I'm joined by the co-author of a new book called Performing Under Pressure: The Science of Doing Your Best When It Matters Most. J.P. Paulu-Fry is an international performance coach and is with the Institute for Health and Human Potential. He's coached Olympic athletes, senior business leaders, and even the CIA. We'll have to ask him about that. He has advice on understanding and overcoming high-pressure situations. And we want to hear from you. How have you dealt with pressure? Tell us about your experiences. Do you have a big event coming up that you're preparing for or dreading? Call 1-866-468-4422. That's 1-866-468-4422. It is toll-free. You can send an email to alberta@noon@cbc.ca or a tweet, "We are Alberta at Noon." And we've got a copy of the book to give away, but you've got to take part in the conversation today to be entered into the draw. Hello, JP. Welcome to Alberta at Noon.
Hi, Frank. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Excellent.
Are you under pressure?
I'm feeling it right now, I got to tell you, because my parents are listening in. My sister, who lives in Calgary, is listening in, so I'm feeling the heat.
Performance anxiety, yeah.
That's it.
So pressure is kind of ubiquitous, right? I mean, we seem to be under pressure all the time now.
Yeah, it's interesting, Frank. I think we did a study of 12,000 people that really supports this book, and a couple of things became clear to us. Number one is that pressure is pervasive and universal and has a negative effect on our performance. So first of all, pervasive. I think everyone's feeling pressure. And you look at the Alberta economy, my goodness, with, you know, oil going the way it's going, people are feeling even more pressure than they did, you know, last year, and they felt tons of pressure last year. So it's pervasive and universal. It's affecting people in all parts of the economy, not just like the high-performing athletes or the, you know, CIA and U.S. Navy groups that we work with. It's everyone and everywhere. And the other piece is, it really has a negative impact on our performance, our ability to think clearly, our ability to connect with others. And, I mean, this is causing, in organizations, we see this all the time. I think we see it across the whole population, but our work is mainly with organizations. And, my goodness, it's pretty obvious how pressure changes everything for these people.
It's funny because we think of, you know, especially elite athletes, high performers as people who are able to cope with pressure.
Yeah, you're right on. Sorry to interrupt, Frank.
But no, but
one of the big kind of ideas in the book is that nobody does better under pressure. And in fact, the data is absolutely crystal clear on this. Pete Sampras, you know, famous tennis player, said everyone chokes. It's just who chokes less. And it's true. I mean, yeah. I hate to say this. You know, I've been to a number of Olympic Games now and, you know, work with NBA teams, et cetera. The truth is everyone chokes. When you look at March Madness, the big basketball tournament going on right now, it's some of the worst basketball of the year because the pressure goes up and everyone is affected by pressure. The real question is who can lessen the effect of pressure on them? And so, you know, the problem really is that when we think that some people do better under pressure, or I'm going into a big event and I'm going to need to do better than I've ever done before to be successful, it's a losing strategy. Number one, it increases pressure. But number two, when something doesn't go perfect in that pressure moment, in that competition, we start to think and say, oh my gosh, I just, you know, messed up this one little play. I won't be successful now. And we go into a vicious downward cycle. And we see the very best athletes who are still diminished by pressure are affected less. And, the, you know, a great example is Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan, iconic Michael Jordan, shot far worse in his pressure moments than his season average. And so, for all the young athletes, for anyone out there, because this is actually, the book is less about athletes, it's more about everyday life. Just know, I mean, you don't have to be perfect in a pressure moment. You won't be perfect in a pressure moment.
Even these sports gods and goddesses fail most of the time. Why scientifically, what's going on? Why is pressure so debilitating?
Yeah. Well, gosh, you know, do we have an hour? Because I'd love to talk in depth. I mean, the interesting part in the book, I mean, what we really attempted to do in this book is bring both a bit of scientific understanding. Because we find that most people take a haphazard approach to pressure, it's not based on kind of some of our new advances in neuroscience and how the brain and body work. We really try to bring some science along with some specific strategies and tools. And so, you know, you're asking about the science. You know, part of what happens is we go into a pressure moment and the body and the brain respond as if, oh my gosh, you know, I'm at, there's a potential of kind of a material impact on my survival or success. And because of that, the brain goes, falls into a few patterns. And so, you know, one of the things I'll challenge all the listeners, and this is what we do in our training programs with organizations, but it's to challenge all the listeners to become a student of human behavior, to really try to understand, what do I do under pressure? And so what is common is that we're in a pressure moment, we're starting to feel the heat. And for most of us, because we take a haphazard approach, because we just, you know, use the models that we've, you know, learned from our parents, teachers, coaches, and by the way, and they might not have been very skilled at managing pressure, because we use them as models, when we're in that moment, we start to feel the heat. We feel it in our body first. So, you know, the butterflies, the heat in our forehead, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of us, because we're not well schooled, we take those symptoms and signs in our body as, oh my gosh, I'm under threat. Oh my gosh, this is a, you know, this is a crisis. And because of that, it changes our body and our brain. And now we get something called mental rigidity. We literally can't think straight. We can't listen very well.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, our psychomotor kind of, our ability to, you know, for an athlete to move freely kind of gets diminished. And so, I mean, it's really quite amazing, because there are learnable skills to help people away from that, but people haven't learned the learnable skills. And so, you know, it starts with, and I know we'll get to some strategies, but is really knowing yourself. Okay, when you're starting to feel the heat, is that really a sign of, oh my gosh, this is a crisis or a threat? Because that's a frame, a default kind of behavior many of us fall into.
Hmm. I want to get to some of those strategies for coping with pressure, but first of all, I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate. What about the idea that a deadline or the prospect of one's hanging concentrates the mind wonderfully, right? That old the old saying. Aren't there cases where we work better to deadline, we work with some pressure, we get to focus where we might be unfocused beforehand?
Yeah, it's absolutely a great question. In the first chapter of the book, actually, we address that. And here's what happens. Teresa Mobley at Harvard Business School has done a wonderful study that we report on that really looks at the experience people have of pressure around creativity. So your example of a deadline is a great one. Okay, so when people have the experience of a deadline, there's more movement. Like we are more activated. We're walking around, we're thinking, there's more energy. And the challenge, you see, is that in her research, they followed 12,000 people. It was a great study, where they looked at the amount of pressure and then their creative output for the day. And she found that there's an interesting conundrum. People feel more creative when they're under pressure,
mm-hmm.
but their creative output is severely diminished. And so it's almost a paradox. People feel like, oh my gosh, I'm doing more work and great work, but in fact their creativity has gone significantly down, and it has a big impact on the creative projects they're working on. And the problem is that people confuse, we do all the time, the difference between, you know, doing work and doing good work, right? So yes, you're doing more work. It kind of, you know, the deadline can get us off our butt and get us to stop procrastinating, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing higher quality, higher value work. And so her study was just, it really highlighted the paradox. So in fact, no, a deadline necessarily doesn't help us do more creative work. It helps us do, you know, more activity, not necessarily more creative work. And that's an interesting one for managers especially to pay attention to, because oftentimes we think, oh, we got to put more pressure on our employees because then they'll perform better. Absolutely, that's not the case. Now, it's not to say we don't, you know, have to have goals and deadlines, that's not the case, but we have to be careful about how we use pressure and use it judiciously, and use it based on the science of how pressure affects an individual versus just I'm anxious because I need to get done, so I'm going to put pressure on you, and hopefully that helps. Mm. And it doesn't.
I'm talking with J.P. Palufrai. He's the co-author of a new book called Performing Under Pressure, The Science of Doing Your Best When It Matters Most. We want to hear from you. How have you dealt with pressure situations? Tell us about your experiences. Do you have a big event coming up that you're dreading? Call 1-866-468-4422. That is toll-free from anywhere in Alberta. 1-866-468-4422. And you can also reach us via email. alberta@noon@cbc.ca is our address, or send a tweet to alberta@noon. And JP, we were talking about, okay, so what are some of the ways we can turn pressure work that might not be as good into better, more creative work?
Yeah, great question. Do you mean in general strategies or specific to a deadline?
Well, let's talk about, I guess, first of all, maybe some general strategies for coping with pressure.
Sure, great. So I think the first one is that idea of becoming a student of human behavior. One of the things, we've worked with the U.S. Navy for many years, and one of the interesting things that you learn working with these groups, U.S. Navy, Army, Marines, CIA, is they're very structured in their what they call back brief. So, the event, the engagement, whatever it is, has occurred. Mm-hmm. After the fact, that they have a real process, a very structured process for what happened, what did we learn, how can we get better. And so I would say for everyone listening, get really good at that, even though none of us really want to engage in that conversation because maybe we're going to learn, we didn't do so well, or, maybe we upset someone in a project, let's say at work or anything. That's where there's great opportunity to learn about what you did, the impact you had on others, and how you can get better. One of the interesting stats that we talk about in our training programs is we know that top 10% performers extract, this is a great stat, they mm-hmm. extract 3 to 5 times more information from the same opportunity to learn as an average performer. Mm. Well, think about that. The same individual, two people go through the same experience, and one person extracts 3 to 5 times more information from that same opportunity, whether it be feedback or a performance review or multi-rater feedback, whatever the case. And to me, it's like everyone listening, truly see feedback as that opportunity to get better. It's one of the reasons I love working with Olympic athletes or young athletes, because they'll do anything to get better. By the way, that's why you need strict drug protocol, because they will do anything to get better. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that sounds a bit negative to athletes. The point is, they're really driven to do well. But really, what I love is they'll do anything to get better. So they'll, any kind of, process or activities or methodology that we would bring to them, they're like, hey, if it can help me get 1% better, I'm in. And I think all of us need to adopt that mindset.
Okay, thanks, JP. We've got an email from Shaylin, who writes, I am balancing the organization and participation in a national dance competition in less than 2 weeks. I'm unable to keep my mind on my dance practices and give my best during the practice. How do I do this? I'm also balancing financial and work instability. That sounds like a lot of pressure.
Well, Shaylin, I think what's clear is you're not alone. I think what's interesting is that for many people, we fall into this kind of a trap, what we call terminal uniqueness. We terminally think we're the only one going through a situation. And so I actually appreciate the email. Thank you, Shaylin. And just know you're not alone. Everyone experiences, a huge amount of pressure, number one. Number two, some strategies. Well, one of the things this is a strategy that every parent should use with their kids, but, quite frankly, I sometimes use it, and any one of us can use it. Before a big competition, or let's say writing an exam, when we start to feel overwhelmed by this thinking mind, and by the way, as we like to say, there's some data around how many thoughts we have a day. Mm-hmm. Research says we have about 60,000 thoughts a day. As I like to say, a female colleague actually has corrected me and said, well, actually, men only have one thought a day, 60,000 times a day. But nonetheless, when we feel these thoughts coming in our head and they feel overwhelming, here's what you want to do. Get a piece of paper and a pen and literally write out 3 categories: what I'm feeling, emotions, what I'm thinking, thoughts, just write out whatever is, you know, whatever thought, no matter how bizarre it might seem, just write it down, and then physical sensations. And we know now from excellent research that when students do this before a test, 10 or 15 minutes before a test, they take 3 or 4 minutes. I taught this to my kids, and, you know, sometimes they use it. I hope they do. They say they do. But you write it out, and what happens, this is the neat thing. Here's where the science comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We have working memory, which is that we can hold on to kind of 4 or 5 ideas or chunks of information in this space, this working memory space in our brain. And it's, you know, above the eye, behind the forehead. So kind of behind the forehead, we have this space. And in that space, we can hold on to 4 or 5 ideas at any one time. When we have kind of anxious thoughts, you know, the 60,000 thoughts a day, and they're, you know, we're concerned, we're worried, we're ruminating. If you write it out on a piece of paper, research has found, it actually clears out that space. So you have more room to think clearly. You have more room to kind of be calm. And so it's funny, because there used to be this thought, oh, you know, just distract yourself. Don't think about it. Don't, you know, and we actually say, not so much don't think about it, but we say, hey, bring it more explicitly to the surface. Write it out. Put the paper aside and go in and do whatever you need to do. And the research has found, I mean, I won't go into it all in terms of percentages, but students who engage in this behavior increase their grade point average. It's so helpful for final exams. By the way, you know, all of the students who are going through, you know, in Calgary and in Alberta for, you know, big exams, you know, grade 11 or grade 12, mm-hmm. This is a foolproof strategy that's so simple, it'd be crazy not to teach them.
Okay. We're going to go now to Deborah, who's on the line from Edmonton. Hello, Deborah.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I want to tell you a joke, first of all, funny thing. I just thought I have to call in because these guys are under such pressure for callers, and I am under such pressure that I need to pick up the phone and tell them this, right?
That's
so
great.
So hello, both of you. I'm in the middle of, the very beginnings of moving after 16 years of being in one place. I'm moving, I'm packing, I'm downsizing. I don't yet have an address where I'm going to, and I'm also switching jobs at the same time. And something that's important, I have a pet, an animal, and he knows that we're going through this enormous transition as well. But in listening to you, I realize that I think my answer to something is rather than sitting down with, say, the pencil and the paper and doing that, although I've been doing a little bit of that, is that if I can just focus on one part of the sorting and packing and accomplish something that is normal for me, that unlocks exactly what you were talking about. It adds that focus. It breaks the gridlock of panic and mm-hmm. pressure. Does that sound like it makes sense to you?
So it's breaking it down into manageable things one at a time and sort of focusing just on that.
And then you get tremendous satisfaction. Oh, my goodness, I've got that whole shelf sorted and packed. I can do this. Right. You know, like one small part of this huge thing that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. JP, is that sounds like
yeah, you know, it's interesting. In the confidence section of the book, which is, you know, part of the third section, we talk about the longer kind of the strategies that take longer to develop but actually act as a bit of a kind of an antidote to pressure. And that section is called the coat of armor, COTE, confidence, optimism, tenacity, enthusiasm, coat of armor. And it becomes like a strong shell that helps us protect against pressure. And so one of the parts of that confidence, one of the ways we build confidence is kind of what we call micro successes. And what happens is that when we, and you just described it, when we take action on just a small task and we complete it, a funny thing happens in our brain. We have something called the winner effect, which is it changes our testosterone and our cortisol levels in a positive direction. In general, we want less cortisol in our body and more testosterone. Testosterone is not the, you know, negative, aggressive kind of drug that we all think it is. It's actually more of a fairness drug, and it helps us move in and take action when we're feeling anxiety. And so when you take, you know, one of the really great strategies for everyone listening is, and Deborah, I think you hit it on the head, when we take action on a task and we complete it, there's kind of a neurochemical change, you know, in our brain. And then we're like, oh, and it actually makes it easier to take the next step, the next task. And it's amazing how that can be such a powerful strategy for so many people. What's clear is that we can get overwhelmed. We get paralyzed when we look at the huge, I mean, when you look at the change you're facing, Deborah, I mean, that's huge amount, and you can just be paralyzed by that. But the truth is that, you know, by taking a step, you get one step closer. It changes your neurochemistry, and now you stand a bit taller, and you're ready to kind of take a bit more action. So, you know, I have to say, Deborah, it's a great strategy, and for everyone, you know, listening, both for yourself, but then for the people you're trying to influence in your life, maybe your kids, your spouse, or partner, just get them to take, you know, enable them to take one small task, and that does have these really beneficial effects.
J.P. Palufrai is co-author of a new book, Performing Under Pressure. We'll talk to you tomorrow.